one, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jill Robbins reports on the European Union's plan to expand computer chip production. Anna Mateo and Gregory Stockel have a story about Russian Olympians. Brian Lynn brings us the technology report on how artificial intelligence may be used by news organizations. Later, we continue our series on America's national parks and head to Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. But first,
the European Council gave final approval Tuesday to the European Parliament's plan to expand semiconductor production in Europe. Semiconductors are computer chips which are important for everything from washing machines to cars. The EU's new law supports its larger aim of decreasing its dependence on Asian manufacturers for computer chips. The EU's CHIPS Act will provide $47 billion in public and private funds and permit state aid for Europe's semiconductor industry. EU leaders want to make money available for new semiconductor manufacturing. The EU's goal is to double the 27-nation group's share of the world's semiconductor production to 20% by 2030. Asia produces most of the world's semiconductors. The important part Asian chip makers play became clear during the COVID-19 pandemic. Western manufacturers blamed problems with supply chains for shortages of cars, smartphones, and medical devices. Governments in Europe and North America are now trying to balance their use of suppliers. The U.S. launched its own $52 billion CHIPS Act, and Britain has a similar $1.2 billion chip plan. Companies like Intel have announced large expansion plans for Europe. The EU CHIPS Act will take effect after it is published in the Official Journal of the European Union. I'm Jill Robbins.
A year before the Paris Olympic Games, officials overseeing many of the sports on the 2024 program have not agreed on how to treat Russian athletes. Increasingly, different governing bodies are permitting Russian athletes to take part in Olympic competitions as neutral competitors without their national flag or anthem. At first, most Olympic sports barred Russians from competing soon after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The International Olympic Committee, or IOC, says it strongly supports those moves, although the body says it has not decided if athletes from Russia and Belarus can compete at the Paris Games. However, the IOC has delayed action on the one sport whose qualification it controls, boxing.
Most of the sports that have permitted Russians to return followed IOC advice on what to call Russian athletes. They call them individual neutral athletes. The sports groups are continuing to ban Russians who are under contract with the Russian military. They also ban athletes who have publicly supported the war in Ukraine. The IOC also suggests blocking Russia from team sports like soccer or basketball. Ukraine is opposed to any Russians competing. Since last year, Ukrainian athletes and national teams have not been competing in events permitting Russians. The Ukrainian government banned its athletes in team sports to compete against Russian teams. Ukraine supporters have been looking through Russian athletes' social media accounts for pro-war posts that could disqualify them from competing. Here is what the Associated Press says about the situation in a few major Olympic sports. The sports group, World Athletics, governs track and field sports. It banned athletes from Russia and Belarus from competitions after the invasion of Ukraine. That ban remains in place for the foreseeable future. After a vote of the World Athletics governing group in March, President Sebastian Coe said at the time that deaths and destruction in Ukraine have only hardened the decision to keep a ban in place.
World Aquatics is the group that governs swimming. It is one of the sports taking Russia's return slowly. It has said it favors Russia and Belarus returning to its different sports. But it set up a group to study the issue, which will report in late July. That means no Russians can compete at the World Championships this month in Japan. Men's and women's tennis permits individual Russian or Belarusian players. But the sport punished some competitions, including Wimbledon, which enforced restrictions. Ukrainian players continue to compete, but often do not shake hands with Russians or Belarusians. Arina Sabalenka is from Belarus. She won the Australian Open in January. She also has been questioned about her past support for Belarus's authoritarian leader, President Alexander Lukashenko. She has said she does not support the war. Russian and Belarusian players are barred from national team competitions like the Davis Cup and Billie Jean King Cup. The International Tennis Federation has not made a final decision on the Olympics, but it has a lot of time because qualification is decided by the June 2024 World Positions.
Those that compete in the sport gymnastics from Russia and Belarus will be permitted to take part in sanctioned competitions as individual neutral athletes from the start of 2024. The World Championships are to be held in early October in Belgium. Russian gymnasts have been some of the loudest supporters of the war. Days after the invasion, Ivan Kuliak wore a pro-war Z symbol on a competition stand while next to a Ukrainian athlete. He was suspended for a year. Other Russian gymnasts appeared on stage at an event to support the war. And Olympic gold medalist Nikita Nagorny heads a military youth organization in Russia. The IOC supports banning Russia from team sports, and no Olympic sport has gone against that decision. The IOC also suggests a ban on team events in individual sports, like the team all around in gymnastics. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Gregory Stockel.
Several major news organizations have teamed up with artificial intelligence, AI, developers to find new tools to help journalists do their work. AI developer OpenAI recently signed a deal with the American Journalism Project, AJP, to use AI tools to support local news across the United States. OpenAI is backed by American software maker Microsoft. The AJP is a nonprofit group that provides financial assistance to local nonprofit U.S. news organizations. Late last year, OpenAI released an AI tool called ChatGPT. ChatGPT and other so-called chatbots have demonstrated the ability to lead human-like discussions and produce complex writing based on short written commands. Such tools are also known as generative AI or large language models. In its deal with the AJP, OpenAI promised to provide $5 million to expand the project's work and strengthen local journalism efforts. OpenAI is also offering the AJP an additional $5 million to help local news organizations deploy the latest AI tools. Sarah Beth Berman is head of the American Journalism Project. She said in a statement, the cooperation with OpenAI aims to ensure that local news organizations can help shape the ways AI is used in journalism. Berman added, the partnership seeks to find ways for AI to improve journalism rather than imperil it. In addition, the partnership aims to support AJP's efforts to create healthier information ecosystems at the local level to fight misinformation in news. The deal will help create a studio that can be used by local news organizations to experiment with OpenAI's technology. The AJP's deal with OpenAI is one of several partnerships recently established between AI developers and news organizations. Earlier this month, OpenAI announced it had signed a deal with the Associated Press to license the news agency's collection of news stories. OpenAI will use AI's news stories to train and develop its chatbot tool. No financial details of the deal were announced. In addition, the two companies said in a statement they are examining how the AP could use generative AI in news products and services. The deal came after the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, informed OpenAI it had opened an investigation into whether the company had taken part in unfair business activities. The investigation reportedly centers on whether OpenAI violated trade rules by training its language model on publicly available data. Some news organizations, book writers, and other creative artists have brought legal actions or sought compensation from companies that used their works to train AI systems. The AP said it currently does not use any generative AI in its news story production, but it has long used other forms of AI. This includes a system that automatically produces corporate earnings stories and some sports reports. U.S.-based search engine Google also recently confirmed it was in talks with major news publishers about using a new AI tool it developed to help journalists report and write their stories. The project was first reported by the New York Times. The tool is being tested by the Times as well as the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, the French news agency AFP reported. The Times said the AI tool, which Google calls Genesis, was still in early form testing. However, a demonstration of the system reportedly left newspaper officials unsettled when they saw the tool's abilities. A Google spokeswoman confirmed in a statement the company had held discussions with news publishers on providing AI-based tools to help their journalists with their work. The tool being tested was designed to do things like help journalists choose headlines and write in different styles, the Times reported. The spokeswoman added that such tools were not meant to replace the essential role journalists have in reporting, creating, and fact-checking their stories. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Dan. Thanks for having me.
In this week's report, you examined a growing number of partnerships between news organizations and AI developers. Why are so many of these happening right now?
So the real driver of these efforts seems to be linked to the fast progress of the AI tools themselves. We've heard a lot about ChatGPT and other chatbots in recent months, and have also seen the impressive human-like results they can produce, and industry experts say it is a time for these discussions now because news organizations simply cannot ignore the technology and will eventually start using it in some form.
Right. And it seems like both the AI companies and news publishers are at this point saying the tools being tested are designed mainly to assist journalists, not replace them, correct?
Yes, this is certainly what the two sides are saying, and there have, of course, been big worries expressed about AI taking over a wide range of jobs across many industries, and including in news and media. But as mentioned, these cooperative efforts seem at this stage, anyway, to be aimed at finding ways AI can improve the news publishing process and help journalists in their jobs.
And when do you think we can expect to start seeing AI-generated stories in major publications?
So larger publications like the Associated Press or the New York Times, for example, have said they are currently only testing the tools and the process is expected to take several months. News organizations have also noted they plan to inform their readers and users when they start using AI technology and also to explain how those tools are being used.
Got it. Thanks again for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dan.
Today, on our national parks journey, we head to the southeastern state of Kentucky. Here, you will find rolling hills and thick green forests. But beneath the land is a strange and silent underground world. One early explorer described it as grand, gloomy, and peculiar. Welcome to Mammoth Cave National Park.
Mammoth Cave is the longest known cave system in the world. It is 2 times as large as the world's 2nd biggest cave system. Its size helped give it its name. Mammoth, as an adjective, means extremely large. Mammoth Cave National Park is in Kentucky's Green River Valley. The park covers over 20,000 hectares. It protects the river valley and hilly land, as well as the vast underground cave system. The U.S. Congress formed Mammoth Cave National Park in 1941. 40 years later, it was named a World Heritage Site. And in 1990, it became a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve Site. Researchers and explorers have mapped more than 600 kilometers of passageways in Mammoth Cave, and scientists continue to explore it.
Water formed the cave over millions of years. Other than the Green River, few sources of water exist above ground. That is because water seeps quickly into the earth. Soil made of broken down limestone absorbs the water. This has created a vast and complex system of chambers and passageways. A delicate and unique ecosystem exists inside the cave. More than 100 kinds of animals live in Mammoth Cave. Some of them live their whole lives in total darkness. Cave shrimp and many other kinds of eyeless, colorless species can be found. Mammoth Cave was once home to about 10 million bats. They included species like Indiana bats, big brown bats, little brown bats, and the eastern small-footed bat. Now they number in the thousands.
Humans first entered Mammoth Cave about 4,000 years ago. They discovered uses for minerals inside the cave. Researchers describe them as primitive miners. Humans explored Mammoth Cave for nearly 2,000 years. Then their exploration appears to have ended. The caves would not be explored again until the end of the 1700s. Many stories name John Houchins for rediscovering the cave. They say he was hunting in the area when he came upon a black bear. The bear was close to the entrance of the cave. Houchins shot the bear, but he failed to kill it. The bear ran, and Houchins followed. It led him into the cave. Experts do not agree on the exact year of Houchins' discovery, and some people question the story entirely. Slaves played many important roles at Mammoth Cave during the 1800s. During the War of 1812, slaves mined the cave for a mineral called saltpeter. It was used to produce ammunition used during battle. And in 1816, slaves began guiding visitors on cave tours. At the time, the cave was still privately owned.
One of the greatest early explorers of the cave was a slave named Stephen Bishop. He arrived at Mammoth Cave in 1838 when he was a teenager. He learned the tour paths from white guides. But Bishop wanted to push beyond the cave's toured areas. He set off to explore parts of the cave no human had ever seen. Bishop and a companion sought to cross an area called the Bottomless Pit. Its unknown darkness had stopped people from trying to go beyond it. But fear and darkness did not stop Bishop. The areas he discovered beyond Bottomless Pit are still open to visitors today. Bishop started naming different areas of the cave that he discovered: Fat Man's Misery, Cleveland Avenue, and Mammoth Dome, among others. He was also the first to discover a river running through the cave. Bishop created a map of Mammoth Cave in the early 1840s. It included 16 kilometers of passageways. Most of the passages had been discovered or explored by Bishop himself. His map remained in use for more than 40 years. Bishop gained his freedom in 1856, but he died the next year at the age of 37. His grave lies within Mammoth Cave National Park. It was Bishop who described Mammoth Cave as grand, gloomy, and peculiar.
For national park visitors who venture into the cave today, Bishop's description remains true. About 500,000 people tour the cave each year. They are among more than 2 million visitors to the park itself. Mammoth Cave National Park offers campsites for those who want to sleep under the stars. There is also a hotel in the park. And there are plenty of activities outside of the cave. People ride horses on the more than 100 kilometers of park trails. They also fish and boat in the park's rivers. But the main draw of Mammoth Cave National Park remains the dark mystery of an underground world with so much more to discover. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.